Today's episode of Robinson Podcast is sponsored by NatureBox. You know, it's easy to make the wrong decision when you're reaching blindly into a bag of rocks, but you don't have to make the wrong decision when you reach into your pantry for a snack, because instead of all that junk food, why don't you start snacking healthy with NatureBox? Because NatureBox makes snacks that actually taste great and are better for you, created with high-quality ingredients that are free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners that you could feel great about snacking. My personal favorites, pistachio power clusters, not trust clusters. Also got the whole wheat strawberry figgy bars as well, not to mention a few dark cocoa nom noms. NatureBox recently made their service even better. You can order as much as you want, as often as you want, without a minimum purchase required, and you can cancel anytime. Just go to naturebox.com, check out the whole snack catalog, over 100 snacks to choose from, and they're constantly adding delicious new snacks. Just pick out the ones you want, they deliver them right to your door like a floating pizza barge. With NatureBox, you'll never get bored with new snacks every month inspired by real customer feedback. If you ever try a snack you don't like, NatureBox replaces it for free. So right now, you'll save even more. NatureBox.com is offering our listeners 50% off your first order when you go to NatureBox.com/RHAP. That's NatureBox.com/RHAP for 50% off your first order. That's NatureBox.com/RHAP. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here to talk about why the latest two survivors lost the game according to the rules written by this man, David Bloomberg. How are you?
Good, good. How are you? How was your Thanksgiving?
Yes, it was quiet, which was nice.
Quiet.
Yes. Yes. How about you?
It was good. Had to, got to bounce around to all the different families. So one place Thursday, one place Friday, one place Saturday, lots of eating. So it's all good.
Turkey hangover?
No, I only had turkey one day, actually. So, yeah. That was good. And so I got more stuffed on Survivor than I did on turkey.
Yes. Well, second helpings of Survivor on Wednesday night. David, great episodes, right?
They were amazing. And the only downside was we lost two, you know, really good players, good contestants, and our winner pick.
Yes, yes. Why, Jessica was your winner pick?
No,
are you on board with me with Chris?
Yeah, I was on board with you with Chris, and so we lost him. Had to say goodbye to a couple of the favorites this season. But you know, one thing I realized over the past few episodes is that most of the players left are my favorites. And, you know, so as they've been turning against each other, I've been lamenting, oh, why can't they just get along? No, don't target him. No, don't target her. And then I realized, oh, well, they're going to have to because they can't all win. And even though I like all but maybe two of them, they're going to be working at cross purposes sometimes. So I guess what I'm saying is good job on the casting there, Survivor.
Good work, Lynn Spillman, once again. Yeah, really great cast and a very fun season. Probably better than we were anticipating, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I was not thrilled with the idea for this season, but the cast more than makes up for it.
Okay. All right. So here we are that we've got two people to get through tonight. Anything that you want to tell us to set this up, how we're going to handle two boots this week, David?
I think we're going to handle them the same way as normal. I did see a lot of overlap, believe it or not, when I was going through and figuring out my notes to set up what each person did right and wrong. So once we get to the rules, we'll discuss each rule and how each of the players did with them. But a couple of things before we get to that main discussion. First, thank you, and thank you, Tyson, for saying what I've been saying for several seasons now, which is whether you call them voting blocks or trust clusters or whatever, they're all alliances. Anything else is just a form of branding at this point. So thank you to both of you for reinforcing that.
No problem, David. That's what we're here to do. And then next season, when people come up with some other name of it's actually what we are sort of floating pontoons of people. Like, oh, okay, this is a floating pontoon of people, not a voting block, not a trust cluster.
It's an FPP.
Yes. Okay. So we will see. We'll see exactly what happens and how many of these things stick from season to season. All right. So, David, let's jump in. Let's talk about this.
So before we get into why they lost, a couple more things, because I think that a lot of this plays into it. One is I want to address the question of whether Zeke and David should have gone against each other the way they did. And obviously, you know, when Zeke or David lose or win, you know, we'll talk about it more then, but now it's fresh in our minds. And you and others have said that the power players shouldn't target each other so easy. But here's my problem with that. If you don't do it, they could make the move on you first. So it's a big game of chicken. You don't know exactly when to strike. Way back in episode 5, David talked about how you should look ahead as many moves as possible. And it seems to me that's what both of them were doing, which doesn't really surprise me, because in the Entertainment Weekly pre-merge interview with Zeke, he talked about how he shared a brain strategically with David because they had a mutual love of Survivor strategy and they listened to the same podcasts. So, Rob, I think you're to blame for this.
Hey, don't blame me for everything that happens on this show. Only the good things. I only want credit. No blame.
Well, okay. Okay. Well, then take credit for having such good players who probably listen to your podcasts. How's that?
Okay, fine.
On a completely different topic, but one I still have to bring up. As we discussed last week and as we discussed before, I watch all the web videos, which there were a lot for this two-hour episode. One of them, I don't know if you saw this, I know the producers put in for irony purposes. It was after the first reward challenge, and Jessica said she was praying to pull the white rock so she wouldn't have to play the challenge. It would automatically go on the reward. And then she said not getting the white rock and losing that challenge was her worst moment out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Little did she know that she would have an even worse moment involving drawing a black rock.
Yes.
You know, and then she also had another confessional in which she said, I think tonight's tribal council is going to be pure insanity. Once again, little did she know.
Well, that she might have had a clue into how that was going to be playing out.
Well, I don't think she envisioned quite how it turned out.
No.
But as we move forward here and also looking at the past couple weeks, you know, I something else I noticed here, and I think you've noticed it too, probably, there's quite a difference between the game Taylor was playing and the games Chris and Jessica were playing.
Yeah, yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, some people say something like this is like the difference between checkers and chess. I feel like it's more the difference between hopscotch and chess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So obviously, we're going to have a bit more to talk about as we go forward with this podcast. Now, several people suggested on Twitter that the Jessica portion would be short, and I would just say, it was bad luck. She picked the wrong rock. I pointed out to them that luck can be a factor, but there are always overriding issues that drive the luck, and that's definitely the case here as well. So I say we dive into it and figure out all the reasons that Chris and Jessica lost.
So the first rule is to scheme and plot. I believe we saw both of these players scheming and plotting. What did you see, David?
I definitely saw that, and it's not surprising since they both have been watching Survivor since the very beginning. And so they both clearly knew that this was, you know, part of the game, an important part of the game, what they needed to do. And of course, they're both lawyers and they both lied about their profession. So right from the get-go, they dove right into the scheming and plotting. Starting with Chris, since he was the first one voted out. Well, he was the only one voted out. he knew his strengths and he knew where he was susceptible. And I feel like he worked with both of them. At the start of the game, he formed a solid alliance with Brett and Paul, as well as, seemingly, Sunday, Jessica, and Lucy. As the game went on, that obviously changed, but Chris was able to roll with it and change as well. We saw this when the swap occurred. He immediately reached out to David, Zeke, and Michelle to ensure he was in control of what happened. And part of that was accomplished by talking to Zeke and making Zeke feel like he was a part of the planning. And then doing likewise with David. So he didn't just come in and say, well, this is my plan, let's do it. The way he talked to them made them feel like, you know, they had a definite say in the decision. Then at the merge, Chris once again brought people together to maintain that control. And he was smart to think ahead and realize that a big guy like him needed all the numbers at the merge in order to stick around because he was a typical merge boot. Chris also discussed in a web confessional from a couple weeks ago that he had what he called put out tendrils among the other players.
Tendrils.
Yes, in the hopes that information would come to him. So he was, you know, I don't know how to describe it. He described it as the way he would work a jury in a courtroom. So he just plants these thoughts into their mind, maybe a Chris seed. I don't know. Then they would bring back information to him, hopefully. And at the same time, so he would listen to them and then he would spread his ideas in a way that he hoped would make them think it they were their ideas. So that's, you know, sort of part of the same way that I was saying with Zeke and David. He would talk to them, bring them in, make them think that they were really a part of the planning. And part of what he did was he was using this method to try to make other people look more dangerous. He would plant an idea and let the other players decide that the person was dangerous to them. So he wouldn't just come to them and say, hey, that guy over there, he's a threat. He would make comments that would let the other person come to that conclusion on their own.
The Chris Tendril plan.
The Chris Tendril plan. So he was working that. Then as the game progressed, he kept David close. And he even said in your interview that he was closer with David than was shown on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew that David would come after him eventually and, well, vice versa. And he knew also that David was closer to Ken and Jessica, and Jessica was also close to Adam. And so that was part of the reason that he was going after Jessica. It would take out kind of a hub in that wheel there, which would allow him to perhaps pick off some people to join with him. Also, he was sure that he had Zeke and maybe even David on the anti-Jessica vote. Well, that part turned out not quite as well. So for Chris, I'd say he did a good job overall with the scheming and plotting, possibly better than anyone else who was voted out before him. But even saying that, he was still out-schemed by David, Zeke, and Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of Jessica, you might think that getting rocked out of the game means we wouldn't have much to talk about in this role. But I think that actually gives us quite a lot to discuss, in part because of how she found herself in this spot, and in part because of the raging debates about whether she should have gone to Rocks or not.
But I would say of the 9 people that are still in the game, or I guess the 10 people at that point, I don't think that just because she picked a rock, anybody would say that, oh, obviously she didn't scheme and plot because she went out of the game on a rock draw.
Right. And we have to remember that we even talk about people's scheming, plotting and everything else if they get medevaced. So, but I think that there are some people who think, well, there was no strategy involved necessarily because it was just bad luck. But as I said at the beginning, even bad luck, something got her to that bad luck. And I think this is the perfect place to really look at strategically, how did she end up drawing that rock? So if we start earlier in the game, Jessica participated in some of the same scheming that Chris did. The obvious change occurred when she and the other women joined together to get rid of Paul. Now, one thing that Jessica mentioned in another interview was that Paul had made the comment about going with the guys and the women being on their own more than just the one time that we saw on TV. So, you know, when Paul left, we were thinking that he just misspoke and she misunderstood him. But from what she's said in interviews now, and I know you didn't get a chance to ask her about this, but she's saying, no, he said that multiple times. This was not a misunderstanding. That made it very clear to her that Paul and the guys were on one side and the women were on the other. If that was indeed the case, then the move to get rid of him at that time does make sense. And it was a good move for her, especially since she believed that she had Sunday and Lucy together with her making that decision. And, you know, according to what Jessica is saying in interviews, Sunday assured her that she could get Brett and Chris back together with them. So Jessica didn't think that this would split the Gen Xers. She thought it would be kind of a precision strike. And unfortunately for her, well, it didn't end up that way. When Lucy and Sunday turned on her, we all know David saved her with his idol. And, well, that bought him pretty much undying loyalty. And I think Jessica even said at one point that she had to vote with him because he saved her. But even then, even considering that, Jessica was saying in her interviews that she knew she couldn't go up against him at the end because, well, okay, if the two of them are there at the end, he just looks over at her and says, well, she wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for me. And then she loses. So even though she had that loyalty to him, she knew she was going to have to go after him at some point. But at the same time, she nurtured that alliance with him and also with Ken to ensure that she had, you know, solid protection there. Now, this newfound alliance was tested when Jessica learned that Chris, Brett, and Sunday were targeting her. She believed Chris was the leader of this movement, meaning she had to get to him first. She pretended not to know that they were targeting her and just said she was going along with whatever fake plan they had, hoping that her allies would come through with the necessary votes to take out Chris like they planned. And, well, they did, because this is why Chris and Jessica lost. So her alliance held firm when she was targeted. Unfortunately for her, that only lasted the one vote. And she ended up leaving the game when she wasn't even the target, rather than either of the two times when she was the target. So to me, this is where we get to the question of whether she should have gone to the rock draw or flipped on Hannah. And I know there's been a lot of discussion on this already. My answer, she was absolutely right to go to the rock draw. And I am going to make the case that saying she was wrong is just results-based thinking.
Whoa. How dare you, David?
How dare I? So, you know, one of the biggest reasons that some people, Stephen, have said that Jessica should not have gone to rocks is that everything has been so fluid this season. So why stand firm when everything and everyone else around you is swirling with all their voting blocks and trust clusters? I think there's a lot of assumption and misunderstanding there. Just because there has been flipping doesn't mean it's going to continue. And indeed, Jessica told you in her interview that flippers were actually being targeted. Now, we know that the master game strategist, Dan Foley, said flippers never win. But seriously, it wasn't just Jessica saying this. Sunday said something very interesting in a web confessional this week. She said that she thought this tribal council would define the alliances and remove the ability for people to float in the middle or jump back and forth. Now, it seems likely to me that Sunday did not come up with this idea in a vacuum, but rather it was something that others thought about as well. This would help explain why everyone held fast in that tribal council, even though it meant all of them risking the black rock of death. I'm not saying nobody will flip again in this game, because, yeah, probably someone will at some point. But I don't think things will be as fluid going forward as some commentators, Stephen,
have suggested. Well, let me in with that. Don't just put it all on Stephen, because that I believe that for every survivor, you know, it's always like, you know, and you have this with sports too. Every game is a must win game. You got to win every, you know, oh, this is the most important tribal council yet. You know, every 4 years, this is the most important election of our time. And it certainly feels that way. But when we get to the final nine, the players will say that this is the most important tribal council of the game. So it just comes down to, if your side wins out, you know, okay, you have a 50% shot from there. And then out of that 50% shot, what win share do you have of that 50% versus, you know, let's say that there's five people left. Even if you say, okay, I have a 1 in 5 chance to win the game. If, and maybe she felt like I had a better than 1 in 5 chance to win the game. So maybe I had a 20% chance to win if it goes my way versus a 5% chance to win or a 3% chance to win if, you know, I remain in the game and the rock draw doesn't go my way or I flip, then, you know, is that difference worth the chance to potentially just go out, you know, in a puff of smoke?
I'd say yes.
Okay.
You know, and I,
and you're more well-versed in odds than I am as a poker player, to be fair.
And it's not all necessarily about odds. I mean, that obviously plays a role, but it's where she was positioned. And I do think, I mean, obviously I could be proven wrong, you know, 2 days from now. I could, you know, it could turn out that everybody flips and this whole conversation is wrong. That's never happened before. We've never, you know, made predictions that have gone totally off the rails. But just looking at the way they were viewing it at the time, I think things are solidifying. You know, that you had this liquid and it's starting to freeze. And even Jeff Probst said in his Entertainment Weekly interview that he doesn't see what Jessica could have done differently because he called it a line in the sand moment. And I know I don't always agree with him, but in this case, I do. So let's look at who is with whom on each side. So David said in a web confessional back in episode 6 that he felt like Hannah was his millennial equivalent. Hannah said this week in a web confessional that she felt that David was an adult version of her. So those two seem pretty likely to stick together. The sunrise scene this week indicated that Hannah seems likely to stay with Ken as well. And in the secret scene, you know, from episode 8, Ken said David was his favorite person there. And, you know, that has continued to build where Ken was saying, I will go down with the David ship, basically. Adam, you know, fits in there as well. I'm not entirely sure how, but he fits in there as well. So that group wasn't going anywhere. On the other side, Sunday and Brett were obviously tight, as are Will and Jay. Zeke and Brett bonded significantly and are likely to stick together as well. And we saw Sunday and Jay sharing information last week. So I would say they're, you know, pretty good too. But beyond that, there are several other good reasons for Jessica not to flip. While Tyson suggested on the recap podcast that there would have been no repercussions, you correctly pointed out that she is incredibly tight with and loyal to Ken and David.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definite animosity from the Sunday and Brett side. She couldn't just flip to them and think it would all be okay because it wouldn't have been. And then Jessica basically said the same thing in her interview with you, indicating that she pretty much had no choice. If she flips, she loses the respect and loyalty from her allies, especially Adam, Ken, and David. And if that happens, she probably loses their votes at the end, which means she can't win. And as I mentioned, she's on the bottom of the other alliance with enemies there. So I have to continue to disagree with, you know, anyone who said she should have flipped.
Yeah.
The game is just not as fluid and forgiving as has been suggested, because even if they're right, even if Zeke's group doesn't all vote together in the upcoming episode, that doesn't mean Jessica had any good choices. If she flipped, I believe she had almost no chance of winning the game, and she believed it too, which, you know, was more important at the time. And she might well have gone out in the next vote or two anyway, but by picking a rock, she at least had a better chance of sticking around. This is where we get to the odds. She had an 83.3% chance, to be precise.
Mm-hmm.
And she certainly has a higher chance of winning than if she flipped and threw everyone on her side under the bus while placing herself under the bus driven by Sunday and Brett. So, you know, there's my case for why she made the right move.
And I don't disagree. I think it's a very complicated decision. If it was me, if I was out there, I think it would have been the right move for me to not pull a rock. But I think that, you know, she made the case, and I'm certainly, you are, you know, echoing that here now, that things looked very bad for her on the other side. It just so happened that flipping over would have been to sort of be out of the frying pan and potentially into the fire with people that were targeting her anyway. So while maybe they might have said, okay, we like you now, it's probably that, you know, it would have been a, you know, down the road, you know, she'd be the first one out from that alliance if they got down to the final six, a la a Cochran who flips over to the other side. So for her, I understand why she picked the rocks. In a vacuum, I say that I probably would have said, okay, let me flip my vote and see if I can work some magic here from the final nine on.
Right, right. And I don't know how you work magic with people who are that
well, David, we can't reveal
you.
All of our secrets.
That's true. That's true. For when you go back, you know, for Survivor 50, you know, I don't want you to reveal all of that. with all of this said, I do want to give some props to Zeke's group and Sunday in particular for sending David's immunity idol off in the wrong direction. And I know you took a little grief on Twitter from at least one person.
Good. I'd like to talk about this.
Yeah. So now it's not clear to me if this was something they discussed ahead of time.
Right.
And I know you and Josh seem to theorize that it wasn't, but I feel like they had a plan to tell Hannah and any of the other, I'll call them questionable allies, that they were targeting Ken. This is somewhat supported by what Jessica told you, which was that Ken's name was among those being tossed around leading up to tribal council, even if we didn't see that on TV.
Sure.
So Sunday was then apparently quick-witted enough to tell Hannah that when she asked, what's the plan at tribal council?
Yes.
I suspect this was all just for misdirection, so maybe Hannah or someone else would flip, but it still caused David to play his idol in the wrong way. So I still think it's worthy of praising them for coming up with this backup plan there.
Yeah, so I went back and I took a look at the tape once again, and I did miss this in my first two times of watching the Tribal Council of Hannah asks Sunday, what is the vote? And Sunday says Ken. So you have to give credit to Sunday for saying, bringing up Ken's name at Tribal Council. But in terms of that side, in terms of them coordinating of like, what are we doing? Are we voting for Ken? Almost like that they were scrambling in the moment. Like, I don't believe that that was happening. I believe that when point blank Sunday was asked for a name, she gave out a decoy name to Hannah. So I give credit to Sunday for being quick on her feet, but I don't believe that there was some sort of like orchestrated heist going on between those five people of, okay, let's pretend like we're throwing names around and let's throw around Ken as the fake name. But we all really, like, maybe before Tribal Council saying on the beach that they were going to be voting for Ken. But I just don't believe that any sort of confusion was happening. It's like a little bit of a fine point that I'm trying to make, and I don't know if it's coming across.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think also Jessica said in some of her interviews that there was a lot of whispering and yelling and various other things that we didn't see, which she thought was funny considering they all ended up, you know, sticking with the same votes that they came in with. But I think it's fairly common that you have a name to give the person you're actually voting for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm sure that they had all decided, well, what if Hannah asks who we're voting for? Oh, tell her we're voting for Ken.
Right.
You know. And so I still credit Sunday for being quick enough at that moment to think of that and, you know, tell her right there at Tribal Council. I think what happened was, and I don't know, because it was whispers, it was hard to tell, but Sunday and Will were talking, and one of them gave the famous Keith line of, we just need to stick with the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when Hannah turned and said, well, what's the plan?
Right.
So, so like I said, yeah. Props to Sunday for, you know, putting that out there. But I agree with you. I don't think they were all whispering, Ken, 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 Ken.
Right. So there's always a fake plan that, you know, you're telling people who are not in the know. And I don't think that this was anything unusual in that regards. I don't think that there was any sort of orchestrated chaos of sending out some sort of like fake confusion.
Right. It was just the regular chaos and real confusion.
Sure. All right. So do you want to talk about who was schemed and plotted too much?
Sure. And I know, as we get into the second rule here, that there's been discussion that perhaps Chris tried to backstab Jessica too soon, which would be in violation of this rule and, you know, could have led to his demise in the game. And I do think there's an argument to be made for that, since the larger alliance still had Jay and potentially Will as seemingly easy targets. The problem was that, as Chris told Josh in their interview, he trusted the millennials way more than he trusted Jessica because, you know, back in the day, all the Gen Xers were tight in a big alliance until, in Chris's words, she busted it up. On top of that, we already know that Sunday was pushing to get rid of Jessica even at least a vote sooner for the same reason. And, you know, that alliance believed they were in the majority. So if Chris did anything wrong here, I would say it was not keeping his scheming secret. But even then, it's hard to push for that because he couldn't really keep it secret because he had to share it with those he thought were allies. The problem was that those allies turned on him. And really, I think they would have turned on him at around this point, no matter what. So I don't believe it was his targeting of Jessica that particularly caused it.
Okay.
As for Jessica herself, obviously she didn't backstab the Black Rock of Death. But she was clearly the target of Chris, Sunday, and Brett for quite a while. And a large part of that was the impression that she was scheming and plotting too much. Indeed, Jessica knew that was the impression others had about her. She told us in one of her web confessionals that the game hadn't been easy because she's always been a target. She explained in another web confessional that she had lately been forced to play a more passive game because she apparently went at it too hard in the beginning, which got her into this predicament. So she had to back off, but it was too late and it didn't really help. Well, that may sound familiar because we talked about that when Michelle was voted out. And as I mentioned there, once you get labeled as too much of a schemer, it's hard to lose that label in just a relatively few days that you're out there.
Mm-hmm.
You may remember, you know, my story about the boss and the employee with the newspaper.
Yes.
So
who could forget?
Yes. Yes. That classic story.
The tale is old as time.
Of course, the millennials out there are going, newspaper?
Yes.
We may have made that joke back at the Michelle one now that I think about it. But in Jessica's case, it was even worse than what happened with Michelle because some of the people she schemed against were still there. But, you know, from Jessica's side of thing, she said she knew she had to have a balance. She had to make moves to stay in the game, but she couldn't be seen as a threat. And she also had to keep up relationships for later and especially for the jury. And one of those relationships that I questioned why it went south was Sunday. I for the longest time, I couldn't figure out why she turned on her so dramatically after they had voted together to get rid of Paul. So I look back to when Lucy was voted out in the immediate aftermath of turning on Jessica for the same reason. And I was reminded that Lucy said she started feeling regret when she realized Chris and Brett felt betrayed. So, you know, as I summarized it at the time, she felt bad for them feeling bad. So she wanted Jessica out because Jessica convinced her to do something that made her friends feel bad, which you may recall. It sounded to me like she was redirecting her emotions and putting the blame on someone other than herself. I have to wonder if the same is somewhat true about Sunday, that together Sunday and Lucy convinced themselves that they were duped by Jessica. You know, even though they went in together on this vote, somehow Jessica pressured them into doing it. And you had asked Jessica about this, and Jessica said that it was unclear to her exactly why Sunday flipped on her. And, you know, from watching, not totally clear to me beyond what I just said. I do wish we had a confessional or something from Sunday telling us why she took the position that it was all Jessica and Sunday had no choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll just have to wait for her post-game interview and remember to ask it then.
Yeah, I do feel like that there was some projection from both Sunday and Lucy onto Jessica during that. Like, what? She made us do it. Like, what are you talking about? Like, she was the snake that told us that we had to get rid of Paul. We love Paul.
Yeah, and I mean, how two people can blame one person for pushing them into it when they would otherwise have been in the majority. You know, it kind of makes you scratch your head. Like, how did that happen exactly? Mm-hmm.
Especially because Sunday had such a good relationship with Brett and Chris. I think that she couldn't own both those things. She couldn't stick with Jessica and also be tight with Chris and Brett, who were understandably, you know, pretty salty about the Paul thing for quite some time. So I think that that was probably the test of if you want to be in the alliance with Chris and Brett, you have to be anti-Jessica. That's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think maybe Sunday and Lucy, you know, back then had a little bit of buyer's remorse. So, or voter's remorse, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It's out there. That's a thing. All right. So anything else on scheme and plot too much?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Rule number three is to be flexible, David. I think that all of the Gen Xers did a bad job in being flexible in that we're still talking about the poll vote.
I was wondering where you were going with that. That is true. The poll vote has hung over this, and it was so far in the past. And even Brett, I think I mentioned it last week, Brett was talking about how, you know, he hopes they can put that behind him and he could put that behind him, but yet nobody put it behind them. Honestly, that's the one area there where I really think they were inflexible, because most of the other places, I do feel like both Chris and Jessica did a pretty good job. And I say that because, like, we already talked about Chris being willing to work with David, even after David helped blindside Chris during, well, the Paul vote, and then saved Jessica on the following vote. You know, Chris reached across the aisle to Zeke. He had put together various allies, and he was not stuck with a single alliance, which is a key part of being flexible. Jessica, she was also flexible early, but as she moved on in the game, I think she found herself getting a bit hemmed in by her position and, you know, by the results of the poll vote. She was essentially bound to a single group, as we discussed earlier, but it wasn't by choice. I'm sure she would have rather had the ability to move around. It just didn't seem that that option was truly available to her.
David, rule number four, don't let your emotions control you. All right. So where do you want to start with this one?
I'm sure that some viewers probably believe otherwise, but I think both players did mostly admirably here. Now, the way some have talked about Chris, it sounded like he wanted revenge on Jessica for, you know, the Paul vote. But until your interview with Chris, that's not the way I saw it. I thought that even when he or Sunday or Brett mentioned the Paul blindside, it was not about emotion, but about Jessica as a player. Then you had your interview with Chris, and he admitted that he did still have something of a grudge about the Paul vote that won't go away. So I guess that did play a role. I do still believe it was smaller in comparison to the strategic role. So, you know, we can debate whether Chris moved against his fellow Gen Xer too soon, but I still feel it wasn't mostly because of emotion. I do think it was mostly due to strategy.
What about from Jessica?
From her side, I guess it becomes a question as to whether loyalty is an emotional or a strategic decision. I would say it's a combination of both to some extent. Obviously, she had an emotional reason to stick with David and Ken, but we've already talked about the strategic reasons for doing so. I think the gameplay reasons far outweigh the emotional ones. And if anything, flipping mid-tribal council due to the fear of a rock draw, to me, would have been the more emotional move, given the logic we discussed regarding the relatively small percentage chance of picking the wrong rock compared to the larger chance of losing the game if she did flip. So, and I know you didn't necessarily agree there, but from a logical perspective, if I'm saying from a logical perspective she did the right thing, well, then she didn't let fear and other emotions convince her to flip. So from that standpoint, I do not believe she allowed her emotions to control her.
Rule number five, pretend to be nice, play the social game, keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. That in my exit interview, Chris talked about his politics, but he did not seemingly talk about them in the game.
That's true. And in fact, that definitely stood out to me. You know, so we'll discuss that first. He held his tongue so well that he apparently didn't discuss politics with his closest allies. So like you mentioned, Chris said that Brett came out to him after the game was over, saying that he was worried that the macho football player wouldn't necessarily have handled it that well in the game. But Chris pointed out he's more liberal than Brett.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, good job for Chris to have kept those politics to himself.
Well, yeah. And according to Chris, that, you know, Brett's not even liberal.
Well, also according to Chris in another interview, he thinks Brett has a crush on him.
Okay, let's not speculate on that.
Brett responded to that on Twitter. So, you know, anyone who wants that can take a look on Twitter. It was pretty funny.
All right. So in terms of the social game, though, between these two sides, again, we could not make friends.
We couldn't make friends between the two sides, but otherwise, again, I think they did a good job. So, you know, Chris, well, he made friends early with the people you might expect, the big guys on the Gen X tribe. But he also forged new bonds when he needed to with David and Zeke, who were seemingly less likely, you know, friendships there. He was generally seen as a good guy. And it's funny because we've been talking about the Paul vote. But I have to go back to the Paul exit interview with you, when he told you that Chris was an awesome, super nice guy. And in comparison, he noted that Brett can tend to spout off while Chris remains very reserved and holds his tongue. So that goes back to, you know, what we said about Chris's politics. So even back then, he was doing a good job of just being nice to people, playing that social game. And I feel like Jessica was on a similar page. You know, as we discussed, she said in a web confessional that although she had to find a way to make game moves, she also knew she had to keep up those good relationships. And maybe more than anyone, she was truly pretending to be nice because she knew that Chris, Brett, and Sunday were targeting her, but she had to act like everything was hunky-dory. And she did a good enough job in acting that way to blindside Chris. So, you know, she was pretending to be nice. She was being as social as she could in the situation. I know that there was still that split there, but I don't think that their social games contributed to either of them leaving the game.
What about the lack of being able to put out the fire over this Gen X chasm? Some mixed metaphors there.
Yeah. There's a fire in the chasm. Well, you know, chasm is big, so that's a big fire. But I don't know how you put that fire out, because from Jessica's side, how do you convince Brett and Chris and Sunday especially that you're not this evil person that you're being made out to be, especially when Sunday is telling a completely different story?
Did either of them ever think of doing the ultimate secret, survivor secret, to gain trust?
Dude, I like you. I trust you. I hope you trust me. If I hear your name come up, I'm gonna tell you.
Cool.
Chris, I trust you. Okay, I trust you.
I mean, David had it all laid out there for either of them to use his secret.
Yeah, I don't know how Jessica didn't just follow immediately in his footsteps there.
Chris, I trust you. I trust you. If I hear your name come up, I will keep you around. I trust you. That's it. That's all you do.
That's all you have to do, apparently.
Yeah.
I guess she just didn't know the secret.
Duh. Okay. All right. So then rule number 6 is don't be too much of a threat. Okay. So I think we have some meat here, right?
Yeah, definitely. Meat without a meat shield.
Right.
Because this was clearly a problem for Chris, and it was for Jessica too. Not at the time she was actually sent out of the game. So let's look at what some of the other players said about Chris. Zeke said he was in a major power position and he controlled Brett and Sunday. Jessica said in a web confessional from the previous week that she felt Chris, Brett, and Sunday were the biggest alliance threat, with Chris being the biggest threat because if he were to make it to the end, he would have a hell of a good chance of winning. You interviewed Jessica, and she again said that Chris was the most threatening out of the threesome of Gen Xers who opposed her. Reaching back in time, Lucy noted at the reward secret scene way back in episode 4 that Chris was the main competitor, the leader, and the strategist. And again, Paul's exit interview with you, he said he felt like the sleeper would be Chris, who I think I mentioned was an awesome, super nice guy, as well as being both physically and mentally strong. So even Chris himself told Josh that if he hadn't been voted out right then, he felt there was a good chance he would have gotten deep in the game, maybe to the end. So getting rid of him at that point was the right move to keep him from being a threat to win. of course, Chris recognized that he would be seen as a threat, and he tried to overcome it. He said in a web confessional from episode 8 that he pulled back and was playing slower, letting the game and information come to him. He hoped that losing the immunity challenge in episode 9 helped him not be seen as such a challenge beast. But quite honestly, I think his challenge beast status was ingrained in everyone's mind since the challenge when he was throwing around millennials as if they were toys. It's just almost impossible to come back from making that impression on people. And the combination of being both a physical and strategic, as well as a social threat, really made him stand out.
I mean, certainly he was an imposing threat. And we've talked about this from way back when. The question was just always going to be, you know, when was this going to catch up to him, and not if.
Right, right. Now, if he had, you know, somehow made it through a couple more, had solidified his alliance, if, you know, he had managed to keep Zeke and a couple others on his side, then yeah, maybe he could have done something and made it through. But it's just so hard. Like you said, an imposing figure with brains on top of it and a social game. Yeah, well, you're almost talking a triple threat there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, what about Jessica in terms of being a threat?
Well, she was obviously considered a threat by at least Brett and Sunday due to strategic reasons. And you know, they followed right along in the footsteps of Chris, who had said that 90% of the reason for targeting Jessica was because she was a strategic threat. But she also showed that she could dig deep in challenges when she came in second in that first individual immunity challenge. Now, none of that mattered in the rock draw, but what did matter was how it made other people feel about her. So we've already discussed at length why I think she was right to draw rocks. But to me, this just reinforces what I said. Flipping would have put her on the side of two people, at least, who had already been targeting her because she was a threat. That threat wasn't going to go away. So again, go back to what I was saying earlier.
David, rule number 7 is vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. So in the case of Chris, certainly a case of voting out the strong. In the case of Jessica, a rock draw, I don't think the rock decides who's weak and strong.
Yeah. You are correct. So yeah, with Chris, short answer is yes, he was one of the strong competitors, and the people who were not directly in an alliance with him voted to get rid of him. So they, you know, that was the right thing to do. He was the right type of person to target there. So did everyone else on the tribe do the right thing in going along, making the same decision that Jessica did, which was going for the rock draw? In this case, it was a battle of what seemed to be the two strongest strategic players trying to get an advantage over one another. So both sides were trying to accomplish the same goal in different manners. You know, Zeke's target, Hannah, obviously would not be considered the strongest person on her alliance, but she was being targeted for being loyal to David and to knock David down a peg so he could be taken out afterwards. But in this battle, all the actual targets ended up being safe. I would say if anyone should have done something different, it would have been either Jay or Adam. And that's because both of them still had idols in their pocket, and drawing the Black Rock of Death would have meant the end of their game and leaving with that idol. I think that Adam was, you know, probably in a similar position to Jessica in that flipping could have made him an easy target for an upcoming vote. And Jay was certainly content staying in the background as he was already immune. He didn't have to worry about the Black Rock and he could just watch the world burn around him while just laughing at the big alliance breaking itself up.
All right. So Dave, let's talk about these appendices. Do whatever it takes to get idols. We did see Jessica out looking for idols when she was walking around in the first episode and found the Legacy Advantage, but I guess she thought it was an idol, right?
Right, right. You know, fat lot of good that did her.
an idol might have helped.
Yeah,
help
yeah.
More. And
yeah, exactly. Now, you know, Jessica was saved once by someone else using an idol, but like you said, she never managed to get one for herself, probably because, well, David kept grabbing them. Same goes for Chris, really. So even though a couple idols played big roles for both Chris and Jessica in the early goings, the two of them weren't the ones doing the idol playing. So, you know, sometimes the idols just get taken before you have a chance, and there isn't a whole lot you can do there.
And then the other appendix is about the final tribal council. But anything here, David?
Yeah, I we mentioned earlier that Jessica was, you know, correctly thinking ahead to the possibility that she would need to keep the jury on her side. And so she wanted to maintain those good relationships, even as she knew they were trying to get her out. And Chris was in a similar situation. Part of his plan for spreading ideas, as I mentioned back in the first rule, was to get future jurors on his side, just as if this were a real trial. So either of them, I think, would have been formidable to be up against in the end, which, of course, was one reason that they were both targets even now.
All right, David. So final thoughts, Chris and Jessica.
I wanted to make sure coming into this podcast that I gave Chris as much time as I could, because I feel like the vote against him has been somewhat getting short shrift in the discussions everywhere compared to Jessica's rock draw.
I mean, in fairness, the Jessica rock draw is a very historic Survivor moment.
Right, right. And I'm not saying it's not. I wanted to make sure that I didn't just, you know, blow past it. But when it came down to it, there was, you know, like you said, a lot more about the rock draw to discuss and debate. Chris could be considered a typical merge boot. He's a big, strong guy who helped out quite a bit in the challenges and made a big impression early in the game. What makes him, I think, a little less typical was that he had a big brain to go along with the big muscles. And even though he hid his true profession, he couldn't hide the fact that he knew what he was doing in the game. So even though he was playing well strategically and socially, others who had aligned with him recognized him for the threat that he posed. When he lined up to target Jessica, who also had her own allies, it was a battle that he thought he would win, but he didn't because of David and Zeke. Then those two men led the charge in the following episode as well, or second half of that episode. I'm not quite sure what we're calling that. But Zeke had switched back to try to take over Chris's allies. David and Zeke became the generals leading their alliances to war. And, you know, Zeke literally said that this vote was all about amassing the soldiers he needed to march his army down the field. But Jessica was caught in the crossfire. She had been targeted twice and survived, but it was the stray bullet, or the stray black rock, that finally brought her down. She had played well up to this point, though clearly she had her gameplay turned against her by two women she had considered allies. This made her a threat as well, and it also meant, in my mind, and hopefully I've convinced some people listening to this, that she was correct to go with a small random chance of leaving the game immediately instead of a near certainty that she would lose by flipping. It seems like everyone in the game had adopted the mentality that this vote would determine the outcome of the game. That's why David was willing to use his idol on someone else again. That's why Sunday said what she said about the sides solidifying. That's why nobody was willing to flip. Both Chris and Jessica were strong players who ended up on opposite sides of one another. One of them was voted off directly. One was put into a position where random chance dictated her fate. But in both cases, it happened because they were considered to be threats to those remaining in the game. And that is why Chris and Jessica lost.
Okay, so at this point where we like to move forward and start to look ahead to this week, it seems like that you and I are getting to a point where there's a line drawn in the sand where you are saying the water is freezing, the ice is forming, that the lines have been drawn. So you are basically saying with all of your analysis today that you think that the rest of the season should be pretty straightforward. You don't see a lot of still flipping back and forth between the two sides.
I'm not going to go so far as to say the rest of the season, but I will say at least for the next couple of votes before someone else tries to find a crack and, you know, says, well, OK, yeah, that was your army, but now I'm trying to create my army and goes from there. But for right now, yeah, Zeke has his army and it outnumbers David's army, which, you know, seems to spell doom for David, or at least one of David's lieutenants. So you're right. Since I am saying everything's going to stay solid, I have to continue down that path. I cannot see any reason that anyone on Zeke's side would flip at this point. So that narrows the field to four targets. We know they have a loved one's visit. We know Adam talks about how he could steal that visit. But he has to be looking around him and realizing it would be an incredibly dumb thing to do.
I think it's a red herring.
Right. And that's exactly what blogger Sarah Freeman pointed out on Twitter. Since it's in the preview, odds are good that he'll point out he could steal it, but he won't. Honestly, I'm not sure that'll save him, but we'll see. I'm not really convinced it's a good idea to even remind people that he has that advantage. Now, one thing that could be interesting is if he gives the advantage to someone else who could then use it to steal a loved one in return for promising safety to him. Again, even if he did that, I'm still not sure it would work, but it would at least, you know, make things interesting, I get.
All right, David. So who is going home?
Well, Adam does have two things going for him. One, he has an idol. Two, he's not David. If David weren't there, I think the target would fall on Adam, especially given some of the things Zeke had been saying already. But with David there, it seems to me that Zeke will want him gone. And I doubt anyone on Zeke's side will argue against that. So to my mind, the only things that can save David are finding another immunity idol, winning the immunity challenge, or Adam using his idol on David to turn the tide. Any of those things, well, they'd make this coming episode a lot more interesting, because I think the way it will turn out otherwise is David getting his torch snuffed.
I mean, I don't think that there's any other potential thing to even lead us any other direction. Like, there's just no evidence other than just like blind speculation to say anybody else but David.
Right, right. And like I said, that speculation would be, okay, what if Adam plays his idol on David? And I think you guys discussed that in the Wiggle Room, didn't you?
Yeah, I brought it up. Possibly could that happen? And again, it's the kind of thing of like, I don't think so. I mean, I would have to say that it's possible, but
unlikely.
Right.
Well, and see, I think it would be interesting if that could turn the tide completely. So if they knew that David was being targeted and Zeke's group doesn't know that Adam has that idol, so Adam could play it and, you know, save David, and then they could take out a member of Zeke's alliance, and then they're back to a 4-4 tie again. Mm-hmm. I mean, does anyone really want to go through that again?
You know? I mean, it is possible, but I mean, the game is fluid, and that's why I have a hard time just looking at things so in such a linear fashion, because I mean, who's to say that Jay and Will can't break off from Brett and Sunday at some point and want to go back with Adam? I mean, is that out of their own possibility? And then, you know, they have ties with Hannah from Ikabula. So it's just to say that everything is so straightforward, I think, is just not in line with how this season has gone.
I still say the ice is freezing here. I think the things are solidifying, and I mean, we'll see. And obviously, like I said, yeah, there's going to be flipping at some point, even if, you know, hypothetically Zeke's group eliminates David's group, so it's down to the five. Well, someone's got to flip at some point, and you know, it probably happens before then, because someone in Zeke's group says, okay, wait a minute, I don't like where I am in this alliance. I just don't think that the flipping is going to happen quickly. I think it'll be another couple of votes. Now, I realize that gets us almost to the finale, but I just think that there's going to be a little bit of straightforwardness before we get to more craziness.
All right, David. So let's see how it all plays out on Wednesday night. If it is David that we talk to next on the exit interview, or if something else crazy happens in this season. But the way this season has gone, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's see where we go from here. Of course, that we've got a lot going on robiswebsite.com for continuing coverage of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. How many blogs do you think we have up right now, David?
I'm going to go with 7.
I don't know if we have 7, but we've got a lot, of course, here at the end of the week. Here's what we've got right now. Just about this episode, Scott Gallagher is talking about Brett's blood alcohol levels. Michael is looking at the not so obvious edit. Christian is looking at the tipping points where players react to another. On Monday, Catherine is going back and looking at America's favorite ice cream scooper, Eric Reichenbach. On Tuesday, Sarah Freeman has a special feature about the evolution of idol play. I don't know if trust clusters are part of it. Okay.
Trust clusters be an ice cream flavor going back to the other?
It blog? Certainly could be. Maybe Eric Reichenbach is working on that.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff. And next week, Christine will be back with another blog as well. So plenty of stuff. Go to robinsonwebsite.com/blog for the latest from the RHAP bloggers. All right, David.
All right.
All right. So we got a lot of good work here today. Two people are gone. We know why the latest two people lost. And of course, we'll be back another episode, David. Can you believe this? Coming up on Wednesday night.
No, it just flew by with Thanksgiving being in there and everything. So, and I think it's going to fly pretty much right to the finale.
Yeah, I know. Only 3 weeks of Survivor left to go. So it's really going to be gone before we know. We'll be talking about why blank won, David.
Yeah, that's I hope they don't go to like a 7-person finale because that's just way too many people.
I think it'll be 6 in the finale. I think it'll be just like last fall.
Okay.
All right.
It's still a lot of people to talk about.
It's a lot of people to talk about. But David, I know one thing is for sure, that you will have your hashtag tendrils out to try to figure out exactly what's going on in this season.
I will do my best.
All right. So, all right. And just one other quick thing. We always appreciate you guys using our links for Amazon.com. Cyber Monday Deals Week continues. Go to robinsonwebsite.com/Cyber Monday. David, anything else?
No. Just I love how Monday has turned into a week so we can get more and more deals on Amazon.
Yeah, the deals are never ending, just like on Survivor. All right, David. Follow David on Twitter at David Bloomberg. I'm at Rob Cesternino. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.